Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Where is North Korea headed under the leadership of Kim Jong-un, and how can the U.S. and its allies manage the relationship with this impoverished and truculent state? Last month's spectacular failure of a North Korean rocket test was a national humiliation, to be sure, but perhaps also a deeply personal one for a very young and untested leader still trying to establish himself. My guest today can tell us more about the tenuous position Kim finds himself in, how that is likely to affect his choices in terms of both domestic policy and international provocation, and how the U.S. must prepare for either ongoing control by young Kim's regime or the potentially chaotic instability that would follow its collapse. Victor Cha is former director for Asian Affairs at the National Security Council. These days, he holds the D.S. Song Chair in the School of Foreign Studies at Georgetown University and is senior advisor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. His new book is called The Impossible State, North Korea, Past and Future. Victor, welcome to Think.
Thank you very much. Happy to be with you.
You have said North Korea as we know it ended with the death of Kim Jong-il. Tell us about what is unknown at this point.
Gosh, there's so many unknowns, it's hard to even say where to start, Chris. I mean, first of all, we know very little about this new leader. We know less about him than we knew about Osama bin Laden. We know very little about the status of their nuclear programs. I mean, we know a bit about them, but they have a new nuclear program that we don't know a lot about. And we don't know whether this young fellow actually has control of everything. I mean, I think we have to assume that he does, but that's an assumption. There's still lots of unanswered questions about who is surrounding him and about how they make decisions. And, you know, a clear manifestation of the concerns was this failed missile launch that they did last month, which has created all sorts of problems.
Leadership transition is a vulnerable time for all but the most robust governments, but Kim Jong-il happened to die at a time when the country was particularly troubled. What do we know about the challenges Kim Jong-un faces besides being quite young and untested?
Well, he is being handed an economy that is in really total collapse, total free fall, in which there's nothing that they produce that they can sell to the outside world, aside from missiles and other weapon systems. There's also a very bad food problem in the country. North Korea suffers annually from about a 1.3 million metric ton food shortage. A number of NGO groups have gone and come back from North Korea over the past year that have tested to the fact that the food situation, although not yet at famine conditions, is quite bad. And so these are just two of the immediate problems he has. The broader and more the core sort of broader conceptual problem that he has is the problem that most closed dictatorships in today's world have, to the extent that any still exist. They need to open up in order to survive, but the process of opening up eventually means they lose political control and could lose their hold on power. And that's the dilemma that this young fellow faces.
And he has also, even before he was in charge, he raised eyebrows among military commanders who objected to the fact that he was given this rank in the military without having served a day in the army.
That's right. He, as far as we can tell, he's never served a day in the military. And starting from about the fall of 2010, a process was put in place in which he was clearly being anointed as the next leader, and therefore was given titles and ranks like four-star military general when he hasn't, you know, served a day in the military. Now, we don't know. I mean, we imagine that for any professional military officer that would irk you a bit, and we assume that in the North Korean case, it is also a problem, even though this family has ruled the country really uncontested for the past 60 years.
The question always arises among people who are not scholars of foreign policy of whether North Korean leaders are somehow insane. But the father was not insane, and there's no reason to believe the son is either. Is that correct?
That's right. I mean, I think that there may have been some insane or irrational leaders in the past in world history. And in, I think, popular American culture, the leadership of North Korea is always made out to be a little bit kooky and unpredictable. But if we sort of look at their behavior over the years, it's not irrational. I mean, it's dangerous, but it's certainly not crazy. And I guess one way of explaining this is essentially that they're a country that really has nothing of value, and yet they know the world has a lot of things that they like about the peaceful status quo. And so North Korea has this mentality where it tries to shake up the peace in order to get others to give them things so that they can walk back from a crisis. I think probably for many this would be known as extortion, and it is sort of extorting peace in order to get things that you want. And so that's not crazy. That is a rational type of behavior. It's a very risk-acceptant rational type of behavior, and obviously it's very dangerous.
You are really bristle at the fact that the United States is often blamed for the fact that nuclear nonproliferation has not worked with North Korea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the reasons that I wrote the book, Chris, is that, you know, as someone who studied this as a scholar and then participated on the policy side, I have been used to hearing for years how the problems with regard to North Korea, the fact that they have missiles, that they do nuclear tests, was largely because the United States didn't try hard enough to engage the North Korean regime, either because of our own ideologies or our unwillingness to sit down with dictators, so on and so forth. And at least based on my reading of the history and then actually practicing as part of a negotiating team, I just didn't think that that was correct. So in this book, what I tried to do was go back to when the United States first actually started engaging with North Korea on these issues, which goes back to the Reagan administration, and show how every administration since then has consistently tried to engage with North Korea to try to solve this problem through diplomacy. And I think it's true. I mean, I think every administration since Reagan has tried to do this. They may have packaged things differently. They may have talked about different pieces of a package at different times. But in the end, the sort of core deal that's been offered has been an offer since the 1980s. And the North Koreans have not been willing to take it.
Can you talk a little bit about day-to-day life for the average North Korean currently and how it differs from even poverty-stricken areas of the other countries around it?
There are two daily lives in North Korea. I mean, one is life for the average citizen in Pyongyang, the capital city, and they are a more privileged class for certain. And so for them, life would be like living in probably the city in a lesser developed country today, in the sense that they don't have all of the high-tech accoutrements of life that people in the developed world have. They have largely 1960s technology in terms of infrastructure and daily sort of daily life appliances, but it's a livable and simple life. Outside of North Korea, outside of Pyongyang, it's a total wasteland, and there really is no comparison to anything that the average American could relate to, because you're talking about no infrastructure whatsoever, no health system, no plumbing, no food. Apartment buildings that do not have windows. It is really sort of an unimaginable thing, particularly when you think about how this country sits, you know, literally right in the middle of the economically most vibrant region of the world today. So that part of North Korea, it's hard for any, I think, American to understand. And so there's a chapter in the book on human rights where we try to talk about what life is like in these sorts of situations. And very different from the city of Pyongyang.
What do we know about dissident activity from within North Korea right now?
There's not a lot of dissident activity. I mean, we hear anecdotes and reports, but again, this is a regime that really closes off allowing any information to leave the country. I mean, the most we hear about this is through people who have defected from North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
But their reasons for defecting are unlike politically motivated defecting that we may have seen in other cases, in the sense that most North Koreans who defect, most of them don't try to sort of set up something outside of the country to try to change what's happening in the country. Most of them simply seek to try to assimilate themselves in the outside world, which is a big challenge for them because they are so closed and isolated that it takes it's a hard adjustment for many of them. Most of them end up living in South Korea, and it's not an easy adjustment. So there really is no dissident movement that we know of inside of North Korea, and then in outside of North Korea, in the expatriate community, there isn't the sort of political dissident movements that we've seen in other cases.
Victor Cha is my guest. He's former director for Asian Affairs at the National Security Council, currently D.S. Song Chair in the School of Foreign Studies at Georgetown and senior advisor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. His new book is called The Impossible State, North Korea, Past and Future. We'll come back to our discussion with Victor Cha in a few moments. If you would like to join us, now is the time to do that. You can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or you can send email to think@kera.org. I am joined now once again in the studio by the senior producer of Think, Jeff Whittington. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. We are working on our overall goal now for the Think show today. The total, I believe, we were going for over 2 hours, $7,000. We're well on our way thanks to some great listeners and contributors. We did get a $2,400 gift from a listener in Irving.
Thank you so much for that.
Thank you very, very much. $2,495 left to raise by 2 p.m. Don't think that it's just going to happen automatically, though. If you've waited to make a contribution, if you have yet to make a contribution during this membership campaign, this is a great hour to do it, especially if you're interested in the topic today, because we have a copy of Victor Cha's new book, The Impossible State, available for you today.
It is a really great penetrating analysis of exactly what's taking place and what has led up to the events that we are seeing right now that are making headlines on a daily basis. If you'd like to receive a copy, you can get it with our compliments when you join at or above the $120 contribution level. You can do that either online at kera.org or over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Thanks to so many of you who have responded to our call. Thank you, Larry Robinson in Dallas, Lydia Knight in Dallas, Kylie Ann Poland in Fort Worth, Chad Spratt in Sanger, and Jan Goria in Frisco. Really appreciate all of you.
Yeah, thanks so much for your contribution. You can join those folks with a phone call to 888-694-6931. Again, you can also, of course, always make a contribution. Those contributions online at kera.org are added to the total that we need to raise to meet the goal this hour. So go to kera.org, make your contribution there. If you make a $120 contribution, we will send you a copy of The Impossible State, North Korea, Past and Future by our guest this hour, Victor Cha. We'd be happy to do that. Of course, the book is out. It's been well reviewed. He's actually been very, very busy lately.
Tough guy to pin down. Happy to have him this hour.
Yeah, we're really thrilled that we were able to get him on the show and that he was able to make time for us today. It's a real honor to have him as our guest today. So I hope that you are responding right now on the phone at 888-694-6931.
We are really fortunate, thanks to your interest as an audience in programming like this, that we're able to bring you top-notch guests of international repute, people like Victor Cha. That is because of this fantastic audience that you are, the interest that you have. And frankly, it's because of your support of the station. We're able to bring you a daily program of substance, we hope, and interest to you because you are willing to support us with your dollars. Whatever amount you can give, it really matters right now at 1-888-694-6931.
40 minutes left to raise $2,495 during the Think show today to stay on track, meeting our goals. So please be the next one to call, 888-694-6931, or go online to kera.org and make your contribution there.
Pick up a fascinating copy of Victor Cha's book, The Impossible State, North Korea, Past and Future, if you're interested. It's a thank you gift available at the $120 contribution level at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in financial planning, web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Victor Cha is here. He's former director for Asian Affairs at the National Security Council, currently senior advisor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and chair in the School of Foreign Affairs at Georgetown University. His new book is called The Impossible State, North Korea, Past and Future. If you would like to ask a question or make an observation, you're welcome to do that by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Victor, how does the potential danger posed by North Korea change if, in fact, the state fails under Kim Jong-un?
Well, if it fails under Kim Jong-un, then you have the potential for all sorts of instability on the peninsula that can ripple out and affect relations among countries in the region. North Korea traditionally has been supported by the Chinese, and the Chinese, the last thing they want is to see some sort of instability or collapse of North Korea that could lead to unification of the Korean Peninsula and a market democracy that is a U.S. ally directly on its border. I think more immediately, if something or unstable were to happen in North Korea, there would be a lot of concerns about whether the South Koreans would move in, which could create all sorts of tensions between the United States and China. You know, the last thing that people want to see is any sort of head-to-head confrontation between the United States and China on the Korean Peninsula, as we saw in the 1950s. So, you know, these are all the different sorts of scenarios that can spin out if there is something that happens in the North. And all of it is exacerbated by the fact that, you know, there is so little information that comes out of this country, even for the Chinese, that it becomes a guessing game. And whenever you have a guessing game and a crisis, you have the potential for miscalculation, which is often the way bad things happen.
Well, the potential for even theoretical unification with South Korea is an interesting issue because there are people who worry that it would, if somehow this were to happen, it were to happen even peacefully, taking on the problems of a North Korea would drag the very prosperous South Korea into the hole.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a concern. I mean, South Korea, as you said, Chris, today is, you know, it's one of the most affluent and educated countries in the world, a major player on the global stage. It just hosted the Nuclear Security Summit in March. It hosted the G20 Summit. It'll be hosting the Olympics, the Winter Olympics in 2018. So just, you know, a major player. And for many South Koreans, the last thing they want is to have to be taxed or affected in some way in terms of having to absorb or swallow up a much poorer, much weaker North Korea. I mean, the gaps between North and South Korea are much wider than the gaps between the two Germanys when they unified a few decades ago. And so for many South Koreans and many who have an interest in Korea, this is often seen as the nightmare scenario. Now, having said that, I think at the same time, with the heart attack that led to the death of the North Korean leader last December and this young and inexperienced leader, more and more Koreans are facing the reality that this, whether they like it or not, this may be something that lands in their lap. And therefore, there is a necessity to try to be more prepared than they are. And so I think that sort of thinking is now starting to take hold in the country.
Well, let's talk about the thinking that took place before, because surely the U.S. and South Korea were prepared eventually for Kim Jong-il's death. They had a sort of pending plan. To what extent was it not fully developed at the point that Kim Jong-un took over?
Well, I think his death took everybody surprise, by surprise. I don't think anybody expected that he would die this suddenly. That includes those around him. I think it was just completely and totally unexpected. Governments in general are not very good for preparing for hypotheticals. Let's face it, they're just not. And often they start preparing after a crisis has happened, when they have to respond to the crisis. It's not because they're lazy. It's because they have so many other things they have to do. And so I think in that regard, I mean, the United States and South Korea may have done some thinking and been somewhat prepared, at least in terms of a concept for how they would deal with potential instability in North Korea. But I don't think, I would not say that it is fully developed. And this is not, I'm not talking about just the current administration, I think in general for the U.S. government. And the most important piece, which is a sort of heart-to-heart dialogue with China on this stuff, it has been absent, largely because, not because the Americans don't want to do it, the Americans and the South Koreans do, but the Chinese are very reluctant to have that sort of dialogue because they don't want to be seen either in public or even in private, that might get leaked to the public, showing that they are working with the U.S. and the South Koreans on preparing for North Korea's collapse.
I would imagine there must be some kinds of closed-door talks taking place between China and the U.S. and South Korea over the situation in North Korea. Can you tell us anything about what is likely going on, if at all, among diplomatic channels?
You know, you would hope that there would be some sort of dialogue going on. And when I talk to my friends who are in the private sector and we come across this scenario, they're often surprised if I say that, well, you know, I worked in government. I just don't think there's a lot of real preparation going on, because in the private sector, they prepare for scenarios. I mean, it's the rational thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the politics of the issue, and that is that the Chinese, again, don't want to be seen in public doing this. So when you have those sorts of problems at the official or track one level, or those sorts of obstacles, one way of circumventing them is you try to do what we call track two dialogue that takes place among these three countries, among former government officials, experts, sometimes government officials participating in an unofficial or private capacity.
Excuse me for interrupting, people
yeah.
like you?
People like me mm-hmm. and colleagues of mine. We try to do those sorts of things. But even at that level, I mean, there's no resistance on the South Korean side. But on the Chinese side, there still is resistance because China obviously is not an open political system like the United States or South Korea, and people can never participate things simply in their personal capacity. And so for them, this is, you know, a very political issue where they don't want to be seen even at the unofficial level somehow scheming with the South Koreans and the United States to prepare for a collapse of the regime, because their official policy, at least as we can tell today, is to support the current regime and support this leadership transition from the death of Kim Jong-il to the young son, Kim Jong-un.
You've made it abundantly clear that the economy of North Korea is in shambles, but can you talk a little bit about the extent to which China has money invested, sunk into North Korea?
Yeah, I mean, historically, the Chinese and the Soviet Unions were big supporters of North Korea up until about the 1990s, when, with the end of the Cold War, both China and the Soviet Union normalized relations with South Korea and really sort of ended their patron trade and aid relationship with North Korea, which is really when the North Korean economy really kind of went into the tank. But really, since about 2006, 7, 8, the Chinese have been economically much more vested in North Korea, particularly in terms of taking mineral resources. The northern part of the Korean Peninsula is rich in mineral resources, gold, copper, nickel, iron, coal. And they've been extracting a lot of that for the Chinese, their northeastern provinces, two relatively poor provinces in the northeast. So they have a very big economic stake in North Korea today, and that has been one of the reasons why they have supported stability in the regime. The other part of the economic relationship is the relationship that takes place between other entities in China, state-owned enterprises, the Chinese military, the party, with their North Korean counterparts. And that's a separate relationship that is not really reported in official trade figures.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Tim in Aledo on the line. Hello, Tim.
Hi there. I have a question. I've spent some time in northeast China in Liaoning, and I've always wondered just sort of what the history is of why it is that North Korea is stuck in this regressive Stalinist regime when they've got the great example of South Korea to the south and China to the west, that, you know, they haven't been able to break out of that cult of personality sort of regime.
Tell us about that, Victor.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think the Chinese have had a vision, a dream, if you will, going back to 1980, where they have sought to try to get North Korea to follow their model. That is, a model that opens in terms of economics, but remains still non-democratic on the in terms of politics. And in the book, there's a table that lists all the visits that the last North Korean leader took to China from 1980 until his death in 2011, and it's and a list of all the places he visited. And it's very clear what the Chinese strategy was to really impress upon him the need to, you know, they took him to like cell phone factories and automobile factories and fiber optic plants, clearly trying to impress upon him the need for reform. But it hasn't really, I think they understand it, but it hasn't really translated into policy, largely because of leadership that still considers political control to be the most important commodity in that system. And as I said at the beginning of the hour, Chris, I think the fundamental dilemma they face is they understand they need to reform economically, but it will come at a price, and the price is greater openness politically.
Mm-hmm.
Invariably, that happens, and that's just not a price they're willing to pay.
Victor Cha is my guest. He's former director for Asian Affairs at the National Security Council, currently D.S. Song Chair in the School of Foreign Studies at Georgetown, and senior advisor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. We're talking this hour about Victor's new book, The Impossible State, North Korea, Past and Future. If you'd like to join us, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or drop an email to think@kera.org. We'll talk to Victor again in just a few minutes. Right now, we would like to encourage you please to take the time and make the effort to become a supporting member of KERA, become part of the team that makes Think possible. Your contribution right now to KERA.org or 1-888-694-6931 goes to pay the expenses of keeping this show on the air and all the other programs that you depend on here on KERA. Jeff Whittington is back in the studio now. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Chris. Yeah, we know that we can make this remaining $2,495 that's left to raise here during Think today to keep on track and, you know, make our goal for the hour and for both hours of the show today. We know we can do that if you'll be the next one to call 888-694-6931. Again, we have a copy of Victor Cha's book, The Impossible State, North Korea, Past and Future, available to you today when you make a $120 contribution in support of the show today. You can join as a sustaining member. At that level is $10 a month. Look, you just put it on your debit card, and it automatically comes out of your debit card every month. $10 a month, $10 a month, or your credit card, or your bank account. It's really easy to set up, and then you don't have to worry about whether or not your membership is current. You basically set it and forget it, like Chris Boyd likes to say.
The Ron Popeil.
That's right. Just set it, forget it. You don't end up with dehydrated strawberries or whatever, you know, 4 days later, but you do end up with a great radio station that you listen to all the time already.
But this station, yeah, you already know it works. You're not going to want to sell it in your next garage sale.
Exactly.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number, or you can go online to kera.org. We are privileged in making this show for you that we are able to run the gamut of topics. We can talk to really brilliant statesmen and scholars like Victor Cha. Last hour, we had Mark Lynch talking about the Arab uprising. We're also able to talk to the likes of A.J. Jacobs and to novelists like Ben Fountain and a wide variety. We try really hard to cover the spectrum of life in North Texas and in this world. And your contribution makes it possible for us to make a show like this for you, to allow you in the North Texas audience to interact with the guests that we have and to be part of the show. But you are really also part of the show when you make a contribution at whatever level your budget allows. For some of you, it's not such a big thing to become a Friends level member at $1,500 a year, or maybe $5,000 a year. For some of you, $50 or $75 or $100 is a really substantial contribution. Whatever amount you can donate to KERA, you hear it at work for you every single day of the year.
Do your part, 888-694-6931. We don't have to sell this product to you because you're already using it.
You recommend it to friends.
You're driving it around. You're driving it to work. You're cooking it in the kitchen. You're eating it at lunch at your desk. I mean,
you kind of have a problem.
you're breathing it. You know, we don't have to sell it to you because you've already bought it. We just need to convince you to help pay for it. That's really the tough part. You know, oh, yeah, public radio, what a great idea. You know, a media alternative that's not beholden to corporate interests in any way. Wow, that's a great idea. Well, let's do it. We'll give it away for free. And then it's, oh, we've got to pay for it. Well, we'll ask people. We'll ask people to send money in. I mean, it works. It seems to somehow work. And we do finish the drives and we do make the goal. But if you've never given, then we're not really getting there. We're not really successful until you make your contribution.
If everybody who listens made even a really small, very modest gift, we would never have to have a drive again, essentially, if everybody did this once a year. And if think about this, if you don't give, if everybody did like you, we would be off the air right now.
Yeah, there would be no station. There'd be no KERA.
Thankfully, there are lots of you out there who want to make contributions, and we would ask you to join these good folks. It's not a big deal, really, from your budget. It doesn't take a lot of your time. It makes you feel great about your contribution, not only to your own education, but also to your community. And, you know, it keeps you from being that guest who shows up at the party empty-handed. You know, when you come to KERA and make a contribution, then you're especially welcomed in because you're helping keep the party lively.
That's right. Call 888-694-6931, 1-888-694-6931, or go online to kera.org. Click on the support banner at the top of the page and make your contribution there. It just takes a couple of minutes. You'll be so glad that you did it when you tune in every day and know that your contribution is helping to fuel and fund this public radio station.
Invest in quality journalism for North Texas and get global coverage in the bargain. That's a fantastic deal, we think. Go online now to kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931. I would not be surprised if this conversation with Victor Cha has whetted your appetite to read his fantastic book, The Impossible State, North Korea Past and Future. We have copies available as a thank you when you make a contribution at the $120 level or above.
Yeah, it's a great read. It's really, really insightful. And, you know, we're really excited and honored to have him as our guest today, as I said before. We're going to have another segment with Victor Cha, but there's still time for you to call right now. You won't miss a bit of the conversation. Call 888-694-6931 or contribute online at kera.org. We've got a couple of minutes, so plenty of time for you to make your contribution and then get back to the conversation with Victor Cha. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in financial planning, web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is former Director for Asian Affairs at the National Security Council, Victor Cha. His new book is called The Impossible State, North Korea Past and Future. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Victor, to what extent do you think China, if the situation were ideal, has any designs on annexation of North Korea?
Well, I think that it's a good question, Chris. And I don't think that they would try to formally annex the country. I mean, I just think that is something that they wouldn't consider. But de facto, you know, North Korea is essentially becoming sort of another poor province of China. The fact that they have become so economically intertwined with North Korea, particularly, as one of your callers said, these northeastern provinces of Liaoning and Jilin have become so economically intertwined with North Korea that effectively they are basically supporting the economy of the country through this economic interaction. And they basically treat North Korea like another poor province. Now, the North Koreans have their own very strong ideology of self-reliance and independence, and it's certainly a part of the myth-making of the state. But the reality of it is they are basically an economic province of China right now, and that's why the Chinese have continued to support a regime and a system that they don't particularly like. I mean, but at the same time, they continue to support it.
Where's the biggest mistake the United States could make moving forward, do you think?
It's a good question. I think there have been many mistakes that past administrations have made when it comes to North Korea. I would say probably the biggest mistake would be to countenance the continued development of their nuclear weapons program. I mean, every administration has been opposed to it and has tried to stop it. But the fact of the matter is North Korea's nuclear weapons arsenal has only grown. It started with a plutonium-based program from which they made a few weapons. Now they have a uranium-based program. And people are concerned they're going to do a third nuclear test. And so I think for many U.S. administrations, while this has been an issue, it is certainly a foreign policy issue, it does not rise to the level of a top priority like the Middle East peace process, the domestic economic situation, the border, Homeland Security border, Iraq, Afghanistan. It's just never risen to that level. And yet at the same time, this is a country on the far side of the planet that is clearly driving to be the newest nuclear weapon state and is trying to test missiles, as they did last month, that will have a range that could reach the United States. So that's a very real threat, and I think we just have to pay more attention to it. It's one of the reasons why I wrote the book.
So explain that to us, because it almost seems as if, this is just from an outside perspective, but yeah, North Korea is on the back burner for the United States for a variety of good reasons, as you articulated earlier. And then there is a crisis, the sort of extortion that you mentioned earlier based on testing of nuclear weapons. And then we quickly shift the pot to the front burner, but then move it back just as quickly as we can.
That's right. I mean, I think that's a very perceptive way of looking at it, because in essence, I think that's right. And in the meantime, as we do this sort of dance with North Korea, they continue to systematically develop their capabilities so that one day we're all going to wake up and they will have tested successfully a miniaturized nuclear device that they can put on a missile that could reach Alaska, Hawaii, and maybe the western part of the United States. Now, the problem is not that they're going to start shooting missiles off at the United States, but the real problem is once they perfect that technology, they're very likely to sell it to others. Because that is what they've done with every weapon system that they have developed. The Iranian Shahab missile is a North Korean missile. The Pakistani Ghori missile is a North Korean missile. So, but this what you describe of sort of we have a crisis with the North, we try to park it in a little bit of diplomacy, hope it goes away so that we can deal with other more important issues, that's kind of been the dynamic over the past few administrations, and I think we want to avoid that going forward.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next on the phone with Blake in Dallas. Hello, Blake.
Hi, great show.
Thanks.
I've seen some videos of when, after Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il passed away, just these huge mourning ceremonies where it's almost sort of an incontrollable crying and grieving from the North Korean people. And I was wondering whether that was an authentic mourning or if it strikes on some sort of chord within the North Korean people.
Blake, it's a great question. You know, I think the answer is twofold. I think first, it is a society in which it is a requirement if the leader dies that you mourn uncontrollably. I mean, so mourning and crying is required at these sorts of events, and I think that's part of the reason. But the other part of the reason that you see that sort of spectacle is that I think there are North Koreans that truly feel a great deal of loss when a leader like this disappears, because this is all they know. I mean, from a very early age, North Koreans are taught that service to the leadership, worship of the leadership, there is no religion, but there is service to this leadership in North Korea. It occupies every part of their psychic space. And so when the leader dies, there's naturally going to be some sort of void. So I think some of it is genuine, but some of it is certainly required as being a citizen, in particularly in the city of Pyongyang.
How important is the personality at the heart of a cult of personality? And I'm thinking specifically, you know, as we look at Kim Jong-un taking shape, we think he's 28 years old. We don't know that much about him. He doesn't seem to be a really colorful figure. I mean, is there a chance that he won't inspire loyalty, even with being bolstered by official propaganda in the way that his father and grandfather did?
I think there is certainly that possibility, particularly if the beginning of his rule is characterized by a series of very high-profile mistakes.
Yeah.
That is likely. And so we've seen the first big mistake, which was, you know, this attempt at putting a satellite into orbit where they invited 120 international press in, and the thing blew up, you know, a few seconds off the launch pad. If we see more of those sorts of things, there is a chance. But what the regime, what they are trying to do is they are trying to bring him back as literally the second coming of Kim Il-sung. Kim Il-sung was the first leader of North Korea. All of these celebrations in April were about celebrating the 100th anniversary of the birth of the first leader of North Korea. It was basically Christmas, New Year's, and July 4th all wrapped into one. And with those sorts of celebrations, they're clearly trying to portray this young fellow as a second coming of this leader. And so there's going to be a lot of effort, even if he makes mistakes, to show that he doesn't make any mistakes. And so, you know, we'll have to watch this very carefully.
He spoke in public for the first time just over 2 weeks ago. I mean, was there anything in watching that address? Did you get any clues?
You know, it was interesting. Chris, this is going to sound a bit too much in the weeds for your listeners, but he kind of reminded me of the first leader of North Korea. The first leader of North Korea, Kim Il-sung, was chosen by Joseph Stalin to run the country after the Soviets occupied the northern part of the Korean Peninsula at the end of World War II. And Kim Il-sung was a 35-year-old who had spent the last, you know, 10 years of his life in China and in Russia. And they stuck this guy, they gave him a speech, they stuck him in front of, you know, the nation and said, read this speech and you're the new leader. And this new fellow, when he spoke a few days ago, kind of reminded me of that, sort of reading from a piece of paper, wagging his finger in the air for theatrics, and really sort of doing things by rote, which was, I think, the way Kim Il-sung kind of started.
Well, there's certainly a lot to keep track of in the future. And Victor Cha, it's been fascinating to speak with you about everything that has taken place. Thank you so much for making this time for us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
Victor Cha is former director for Asian Affairs at the National Security Council and author of the new book, The Impossible State, North Korea, Past and Future. If you would like to read a copy of Victor Cha's book at the same time that you are supporting this radio station that brought you this conversation today, we happen to have a deal for you. You can go online to KERA.org or call 1-888-694-6931. Make a contribution of $120 or more, and you can pick that as your thank you gift. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Chris. $605 left to go to make the goal for Think Today. It's a $7,000 two-hour goal. So thanks to everybody who's gotten us so far. We've raised about, $6,395. So $605 left to go to make the goal for the show. That's 10 people at $60. That's 5 people calling with the $120 contribution to, you know, give or take a couple of dollars, to pick up Victor Cha's book, The Impossible State. What a great way to support KERA, your public radio station. Where else are you going to find a conversation about North Korea like that in the market? I don't know. Maybe, you know, other stations do interview some of the same folks that we talk to from time to time, but they don't there's no way they spend as much time with them as we do. And we're just really honored and thrilled to be able to bring you these kinds of conversations every day.
And Jeff works really hard to make sure that the people we bring you, I mean, we spoke with a very high-level diplomat and statesman, but Victor Cha has this gift of making it very understandable and speaking in plain terms about a very important situation. That is part of the sort of producing element that makes this show appealing for you, we think, and hopefully is a good reason for you to support it at 1-888-694-6931. Just got an update. We have $385, Jeff, left to raise in the next few minutes. We can absolutely do this. Maybe you want to be the 85, or maybe you want to be 185, or maybe you can do 385, or somewhere along the way. And we would, of course, love to surpass this goal because we are on our way to raising $700,000. Your participation right now now is greatly appreciated. Join folks like John Evans in Dallas. Thank you, John. Arthur and Julia Cooper in Richardson. Jeffrey Jones and William Chow, in Dallas. Thank you so much.
Thanks to Sonia Kakar in Dallas, Michelle Sellers and Jim Richards in Denton, and Susan and Daniel O'Brien in Gun Barrel City. Really appreciate your contributions this hour. We're talking about Victor Cha. We had him booked a few weeks ago, and then he was suddenly, the State Department actually sent him to South Korea because of that missile test that North Korea did. They wanted him there, as he's an advisor. They wanted him there to make sure, or, you know, to be able to figure out what's going on. And then we had him booked for yesterday's show, and he got called to another government another meeting. So he was able to make time for us today. So, I mean, we were just talking and you were just hearing from somebody who's really involved in our country's relationship with the Korean Peninsula. So it's really nice to be able to hear his perspective, especially considering that things are happening right now, even today, over in North and South Korea that do have an effect on our troops that are stationed there and our lives here in America.
There are people who say, well, a local radio audience doesn't care about this kind of stuff. We know that you do. We know that you respond to programming like this. We're so pleased to be able to bring it to you. We have $385 left to go and about 4 minutes to get there. Your contribution right now can make sure we stay on target with this goal. You can do this online at kera.org or over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Just heard from Penny Jones in Richardson, who has added to the total that we've raised over the past 2 hours. Thank you so much, Penny. We would love to read your name as well.
We'd love to hear from you. 888-694-6931 is the phone number. Online at kera.org. Click on the support banner at the top of the page and you can make your contribution there safely, securely, and efficiently. And you know, that's this drive, the common theme for this drive and really the last couple of drives has been, how can we get more efficient than we have been before? Because let's face it, last spring it took us about 18 days to reach the goal. A year and a half ago or so, the winter drive, January of 2011, took 24 days to get to our goal. Well, last January, we did it in 12 days. We set out hoping to make this one a reality in 9 days. Today is the ninth day, so we're actually going to extend a little bit because we have to make the goal. But we still have an opportunity. We still have a huge opportunity. If you will get on the phone, if you will get on the web right now and make your voice heard, make your gift of support to KERA, we still have an opportunity to raise the $700,000 in record-breaking time.
And here's the thing. We get hung up on the fundraising because it has to happen in this short period of time, and we really want to be successful and to continue to serve you and get back to regular programming. It's a little bit like the way people who are about to get married get really hung up on the wedding, but the marriage is the thing that really counts, the relationship with the station. So as soon as we can get your contribution, which is sort of getting the wedding, which is lovely and wonderful and it makes you feel great. But as soon as we get that out of the way, we get back to the real work of our relationship, serving you full time with quality journalism, quality information, entertainment, the things that you value this station for. So please jump online now to kera.org. Maybe make a gift for the very first time, maybe to any charitable organization. Maybe you're a young person. See how great it feels to be part of the team that makes Think possible and that makes KERA possible.
And while we could spend $20,000 on a very elaborate dress and send Chris Boyd out in a horse-drawn carriage all over town to raise money for the station, we'd rather, you know, invest that money in our future relationship with you by making quality programming for you today, tomorrow, and next year.
Maybe we should try the horse-drawn carriage and the
you want to do
the
that?
Beaded gown. No, actually, because we are unbelievably thrifty with your money around here. And it's something that, you know, it may not matter so much to you, but it matters to us. We know that the money that supports us comes from individuals who are hardworking people just like you, just like us, quite frankly. We are as careful as we can possibly be to make sure that your money goes to pay for the programming that you value. So please feel safe investing your money with KERA at 1-888-694-6931.
You should know, folks, that Chris Boyd provides her own pens.
I do provide my own pens.
Not just because she has like a weird sort of pen obsession about a certain kind of pen, but also because, you know, I figured out where, by the way, I figured out where the pens are.
I know where they're kept, but I feel guilty because I can go buy my own.
I didn't realize there were pens. For years, I would either find, air quotes around find a pen.
Find a pen on my, that's why I was losing.
No, I don't take your pens. But I would, acquire my own pen But I did find out that there's like a box of pens up here in the radio newsroom. There is a box of pens. So that was a revelation to me. I've been here 15 years. That was a revelation to me. So yes, we are very, very frugal with your contributions. We try, you know, Chris walks around when she's not preparing for the show or doing the show. She walks around turning lights off. That's one of her things that she does. So
that comes from being a mom, I think.
Well,
but yeah.
Just so know that we're doing our absolute best to bring you this service as efficiently, as frugally, as cheaply, but also with the quality that you've come to expect from public radio.
Yeah, we do turn the lights on when we're doing the show because we know that it matters that I can see what I'm looking at. Give us a call now. We have $385 left to go in order to have made the goal for Think Today. You can help us get there with your contribution in any amount at KERA.org or over the phone at 1-888-694-6931.
And I'm going to go get a pen real quick before people hear me and go get all the pens.
I know, they're going to be gone. You can receive a copy of Victor Cha's book, The Impossible State, when you make your contribution at or above the $120 level, or choose any other thank you gift that you find that you can check out when you go online to make your contribution at KERA.org. Thanks.